Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, tonight's show. This is Arlene Reed with the West Fresno Democratic Club, and tonight we're going to be talking about the blackface incident that happened at Bullard High School, and I'm hoping that all of you will call in. I don't have the number in front of me. I believe it is 563-999-3490. And the reason that we are talking about this tonight is because we want to make sure that this issue stays in the front of everybody's mind and not gets lost in the day-to-day shuffle of living here in Fresno, California. So we're hoping that people call in and share how they feel about this this incident. And one of the problems that we're having is the fact that the vote that was taken by the cheer squad about this young lady has not been upheld by Fresno Unified and by the administration at Bullard High School. So we want to take the temperature of people who are listening tonight in Fresno and through the country about what has happened with this overtly racist incident that took place at a high school here in Fresno, California. Now, this incident has gone national. It's gone viral. There have been reporters from the LA Times doing things about this. There have been incidents of friction between students on campus at Bullard High School. And there's been some question about whether or not this young lady is going to cheer this coming Friday at Bullard's home game there on the campus of Bullard High School. We understand that they're bringing in bleachers and so on and so forth, and that they are limiting the amount of people who can attend the game to 500. So I would love, love, love to hear what you all have to say about this. You want to call it at 563-999-3490 and let us hear what you have to say. Reverend Harris, God bless him, is running the board for us tonight, so he is going to let us know if anybody calls in. He is my partner in crime on this. And actually, I should say he is my partner in fighting for justice in this. And we want to keep this in the forefront. So, putting this in a historical context, people are asking myself and Reverend Harris and Sister Maria Ells, you know, why can't you all just let this go? Well, the thing is that it's not our call to let it go. We have black parents who are upset. We have black children who are upset. And we need to be able to stand shoulder to shoulder with them in their fight for justice on campus at Bullard High School. So that being said, we want to know, where is the rest of the black community on this issue? And if the sister who represents the Edison High School area on the school board, Keisha Thomas, if she's listening in, I really wish, I would love to hear what her opinion is on this issue. I know this is not your area. This is Terry Slattic's area, but I would love to get your opinion about what should be done about this, especially the part where the cheer team voted this young lady off, and that decision is totally being ignored and overruled. So this is the children at Bullard High School of all colors are getting a lesson in how democracy is and is not supposed to work. You know, if you take a vote and a decision is made based on that vote and then that vote is ignored, what happened to your vote? Where's the power in your vote? And we have to remember, folks, these are young people who are going to be of voting age in popular public elections in the very, very near future. These are the men and women, the young men and women who are going to be running the country in just a very, very scant few years. So what kind of example are we showing them? You know, and so, you know, the other night, Reverend Harris was talking about this, and he, you know, was asking the question, where are the black organizations? And I would love to know where they are as well. Where's the NAACP? Where's BAPAC? Where are the black churches and the black pastors? Now, I have to say, Pastor DJ Kreiner was at Buchanan High School wearing a black shirt in the bleachers, and we want to give a shout out to Pastor Kreiner and thank him for his support. And we want to thank all the people who were there in black shirts. And there were many, many young people in black shirts at that Buchanan game. So we want to give a shout out and a big thank you to all of them who saw their way clear to stand with the black cheerleaders against what was happening on their cheer squad. So here's my question. And this is a little off the path of the blackface incident, but it is still connected because it has to do with race and sports and high school. I don't know if any of you saw the news story about the young lady who was who won a swim match and was disqualified because it was a school issued swimsuit she was wearing, and the judge, she won the match. She won her swim race, and the judges decided that her swimsuit was inappropriate because she was curvier than some of the other girls, and it just so happened that, you know, she was showing more than she should have at the bottom. Now, let me say that this young lady was mixed race, and there was a big uproar about this. This is a teenager now. She's wearing a school-issued swimsuit. Well, there was a hue and cry about this, and they had to reinstate her winning race. So the people at this school in Alaska, Diamond High School in Anchorage, stood up and fought for this girl. High school sport. Why cannot this happened? The same things happened here in Fresno, where a vote was taken by this young lady's peers, and the vote is being ignored. I need somebody to explain this to me. Anybody. I would love for you all to call in and talk about this issue at 563-999-3490. So, Reverend Harris, do you have anything that you want to add about what's going on with this issue so far, what you've heard from any of the parents or anybody in the community?
Yes, you have a caller online, 3366.
All right, 3366. Welcome to the Democratic Club Thursday show. What would you like to share tonight?
Oh, I was listening in just at the intro, and you know, just you know, why is Fresno so silent, like, when it comes to things that we should be outraged about? So,
yeah,
that was just a good question to pose.
Thank you. Thank you. I don't understand why it's really presents any difficulty when the young people took a vote. This was a vote taken by her peers. This is some outside group that came in, and she was voted off the team.
Yeah.
And their vote is not being respected. I have a problem with that. I really do. So I'm wondering if where the parents are. I don't know if we know that, or how the children are still feeling, or in fact how the football players and the basketball players are feeling about having this little girl cheer for them. I would love to take a survey of them.
I think that's why, you know, I think they want to lock this whole issue down just so we won't start asking questions like this. So we won't go beyond the cheerleaders. So we will be satisfied with, you guys are complaining about us hiring more black people. Well, okay, we'll hire black people because Fresno Unified, we don't want to pull, you know, off. We don't want to pull the covers off of everything. So, you know, let's just really try to contain this, because if we don't contain this, and if we don't appease them in the short term, you know, and look like we're, you know, we're really trying. Maybe they are trying to a certain extent, but it's like, okay, we don't just want you to just hire black people. We want you to change the whole culture of Fresno Unified School District.
Right.
And
that's the bigger question.
Is not, and the things that go on and happen at Buller, while they may be some of the more overt cases, we all know that, it's, you know, racist things happen throughout Fresno Unified School District.
Right.
So,
right.
But they don't want to peel open that that can of worms, so they're trying to keep it contained and appease.
Wow.
And I just really hope that our folks get woke and say, okay, well, that's one thing, but you, now what about this? Now what about that?
Well,
you know,
you make a good point, sister. You make a very good point. So my thing is this: okay, if you are going to hire black people, as you know, and I don't want to say as a token or whatever, or as a trade-off, but if you're going to hire black people, number one, are you going to hire them and then support them in the process of them doing their job? Are you going to keep them and push them along and give them opportunities? Or is this just a bandage so you don't have to deal with everything else? So you make a very good point. And I think Reverend Harris had mentioned either earlier this week or last week that Fresno Unified is either the third or fourth largest school district in California. That is a tremendous amount of students. And if we have students that are dealing with this type of racism on their campuses, then we have a bigger problem than just a cheerleader or a buller. But this is sort of like the, what do you call it, the concentrated version of the racism in this particular incident. So, you know, I was listening to KPFA earlier this week, and there was a sister who had written a book, and she said that black girls, specifically black girls, suffer more expulsions and suspensions and any other type of punishment in a public school setting than any other group.
Yes.
Any other group in public schools. Now, I had to let that sink in for a minute. So given the fact that black girls receive all this punitive type of treatment, when it comes to punishment, it made me wonder if this had been the shoe on the other foot and a black cheerleader had done this, she would have already been gone from the team. We wouldn't be talking about this.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm wondering go ahead.
You know, my daughter had a African-American teacher last year, and it was something that went on in the class, and, you know, she got in an argument, you know, with another student. And, you know, if you know my youngest daughter, she You know, she's feisty and she's outspoken, mm-hmm. but she's not disrespectful, you know, and she
definitely respects
authority. So she, like, really just let loose on this other student because the other student was picking at her. And so,
right.
you know, I'm like, the teacher called me and she said,
mm-hmm.
hey, she said, I just want to give you a chance to talk to your daughter and you know, so she could come. If you can calm her down, because I haven't ever seen her like this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, and I'm getting on the other student because the other student did agitate her, you know. But at the same time, I want her to know she's not in trouble, but I need her to, you know, calm down. So,
right.
you know, I talked to my daughter. She was upset, but I got her to calm down. I called
right.
the teacher back, and I thanked her. And I said, you know what? I said, thank you. I said, because... If she had a teacher that may have been white, and I just was honest with the
mm-hmm.
teacher, I said, if
mm-hmm.
that had been a white teacher, she'd have sent my daughter to the office.
Yes.
And anytime
yes.
you send your kid to the office and you allow those people to write something negative
yes.
on their school record, that's
Tell
safe.
It. Tell it. Absolutely.
So the least
Absolutely.
Amount of time they in that office for them to
right.
write, the better off they are.
The better off they are. And isn't it? And so what we have here, just from what you share with us tonight, is the usual stereotypical view, the narrative of black women and girls, you know, that they're angry, that they
mm-hmm.
can't be controlled, that
mm-hmm.
they're dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, you need to calm down. I'm using air quotes. Y'all can't see me.
Mm-hmm.
And that type of thing. But this teacher, because she knew and understood the dynamics of sending your child to the office for something that it didn't have to go that far, saved a whole different, you know, going down the road of having to deal with that. And this is what so many public school teachers do not understand about black children. They don't
mm-hmm.
understand how it is when our children get upset and the reasons why they're upset.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't, these teachers are not required to have that cultural sensitivity and historical understanding of behaviors of black boys and girls. And so
yep.
you have all this stuff happening. Go ahead, Reverend.
You have another caller.
Okay. Caller, you want to go ahead and come on in and share with us? We were talking about the blackface incident and how black students are treated in Fresno Unified. What would you like to share tonight?
Well, I don't live in California. I just know what I read. But I read where it said that 75% of black males in the state are not reading at level. Is that somewhat true?
That's yes, that's probably true. Most of the incarcerated black folks, men and women, have not finished high school, and many, many, many are functionally illiterate. That is true. I'm not saying all of them, but
all right,
a good number.
Let me ask you a question. If that goes on, so that means that they didn't finish high school, that means they wouldn't learn being taught how to read in school.
Yes,
but
they would just pass
essence,
through.
In essence, whose fault is that?
Where you want to start?
Well,
it's a double whammy between the parents and the teachers.
Well, here's the thing. If the child's sitting at the desk, the teacher's getting paid. Our teachers
mm-hmm.
are getting paid. If the child moves on, they're getting paid whether they learn or not. But it's up to the people of that community, black folks. That's their responsibility to make sure that their children are learning. And if they're not, they're supposed to do the things necessary where they are.
Well, let's step back for
and
a
would
minute.
You agree?
And that is, well, let me answer your question. Let me just step back and say it's not just black folks. It's Chicano folks. It's Asian folks who in our Central Valley are Hmongs who have immigrated here. So what I'm trying to say is this. In California, it has been my experience that you have many people who matriculate through the system who are not at grade level. Most of these are poor people in poor schools and poor neighborhoods that, you know, they're getting teachers who are new to the profession. They're getting teachers who are not experienced. The more experienced teachers are going somewhere else. And so you have students who languish in these schools, and they just get pushed along. They just get pushed along.
I understand that. And I don't hear Hispanic, you said Asians. I don't hear Asians complaining about this. Yeah, I mean,
well,
Asians
Hmongs
are
not going to complain. The Hmong population. Well, there's Asian and then there's Asians. I'm talking about the ones that live in the Central Valley who came from Cambodia and Laos after Vietnam. They are, they are immigrants. A lot of them, English is not their first language. And so, you know, it's been different for them, and they're not complaining because it's not in their culture to complain. Black people have been in this country 400 years, and we pay taxes just like everybody else pays taxes, but our students are not doing what they need to do. But specifically tonight, we're talking about the racism in Fresno Unified with this blackface incident about this teenager who is at a very affluent high school, and she felt that she could put a black face on and mock black people and that it was going to be okay. Her peers on the cheer team voted her off, and suddenly she's still on the team. She's still able to participate on that team, and I don't think that that is fair.
Well, you know, as far as that's concerned, that could be considered a distraction from what is really the problem. If you have children that's going through the school system, and ultimately the first line of defense is the parent, then you say parents, a group. But if the parents are not having their child evaluated to see exactly where they stand as far as their attainment and ability to do work at a certain level, if the results come back and say that they're not, then that parent's responsibility is to make sure that their child gets what they need in order for that to happen. Now, I don't know about California.
Well, let me ask you, brother, how are the public schools where you live? I don't know if you still have children in school or if your children went through public schools, but if you have children, but how are the public schools where you live?
Well, in Missouri, the law says that whatever the curriculum, the instructional material, and the books, that's up to the local school district. The law says that. It's up to the parents in their local school district. The State Board of Education cannot dictate to a school district what
right.
they can. I got
that's,
the law right
my
here.
Question. My question is, how are black students doing in that district? That's my question to you.
Well, you have some districts where they're doing well, and you have those where you have the same type of, I guess you can call it, animosity going on, where parents are not doing what they should be doing.
Okay.
And then you have a school out there in California, in Los Angeles, on 6th and Slauson. It's called the Marcus Garvey Academy. And
that
I knew the founder.
That sounds like a private school.
It was.
Like
matter
a charter
fact,
school.
And no, it wasn't a charter school. It was a private school. And I started to move my daughter out there so my grandson could attend it because of what was going on in school. That should be the model. It should not be the exception. Onion Pomeroy founded this school.
I definitely like that last statement. And here in Fresno, we know that our school systems are failing. And we know that collectively as a community, we can build our own institutions and teach our kids and they will excel. We believe our kids can excel. We know they can excel. But when you have a system who's draining this money and they're not educating our kids to the level they can be educated to, and it's not set up for our children to succeed in, then we do have to start talking about building our own institutions. And that's what our Fresno Freedom School works on here, is working with
that's
our kids
true.
Outside
that's
of the school, and what we encourage other parents to do. We have some
that's
parents, and just to assume that our parents are not or have animosity or something like that, that's a kind of a generalization, because the fact of the matter is we have a lot of working poor. We have a lot of parents holding down 2 and 3 jobs, and they get in, and, you know, they may not have that time that's needed to sit down and help their kid with reading or surrounding them with language or surrounding them with just things that can just help them develop and excel.
Right.
You know, so
that's
so
right.
We know that we don't take it for granted
mm-hmm.
that because our parents are poor that they don't care about education.
You know,
so a lot of parents
you gotta,
are poor that if they are home, they do make sure their kids are being educated. They do make sure that they doing
right.
that extra and teaching their kids outside of the school setting. But that still do not excuse and make us
nope.
where we don't hold our schools accountable.
You're absolutely right.
Accountable for the lack of quality and education they give our kids, and do the things necessary to dismantle and break those systems down that are causing
right.
causing that.
Well, you
that's
know, you
right.
got an organization there in Oakland called Oakland Youth First. It's ran by a airline captain by the name of Matthew Graves. And he has a facility set up where he brings children in, these black kids now, not
mm-hmm.
Vietnamese and so on.
Yeah,
on,
yeah. Well,
and he provides aviation. He provides maritime training and aviation training for young children because there's a demand for that.
Mm-hmm.
So no
okay.
matter what your situation is, you still, it's your responsibility to make sure that your
okay,
child is being
brother.
Educated.
Okay, brother. So let me ask you this. So you were going
to
bring your daughter
to hold the educators accountable.
Right. You were going to bring your daughter to California. Did that happen? Did you bring her to L.A.?
No, she didn't want to move out there. But this particular
uh-huh.
grandson, he's doing. He went on. He's doing very well. He's.
Well, that's good.
I don't
okay.
like to talk about my kids because you know we're, you know, it's a disadvantage. People are not as fortunate, but. What I'm saying is that I see things that go on, and no matter what the situation is, it still is your responsibility
well,
to the child.
And
well,
it's our responsibility
well,
as parents to hold our education system responsible.
That's right, because
yeah,
we're paying
whatever
taxes
it takes.
For it. We're paying taxes for it. So we want to thank you, brother, for calling in. And, you know, in California, we face a lot of challenges. It's supposed to be a very liberal state, but we live in a very conservative area. And so we already know that we need what we need to do for our children. But the way the system is set up, we get a lot
and you
of
know,
pushback. Hold on. We get a lot of pushback
mm-hmm.
when we try to organize. And you know, and parents know that even if they can't help their children do the homework, if they just ask, did you do it? You did? Let me see it to see if it's completed. These are the questions that we need to ask. And, you know,
and let me say one other
right.
thing, too. I work with the National Society of Black Engineers. And at their last national convention, which was held in Detroit, ended March the 31st. You had over 15,000 STEM students there. It's all black. Lockheed Martin hired 400 of them right off the convention floor. 2 years before that, Northrop Grumman hired 400 plus each year, not including the thousands that was being hired by other corporations out of the 15,000 that was there. So black
your
children just got
is.
These the black children that has what they should have, there's no problem for them
well,
to get snatched
well,
up.
Let me say this, brother, and then we're probably going to take another call.
Yeah, I'm
going to
let you go.
Move on to
I'm
going to
continue
call.
To listen.
Let me just say this. Just because somebody gets hired, you're talking to somebody who affirmative action did not work because they will hire you. That does not mean they're going to keep you. That does not mean they're going to promote you. That does not mean it's going to make your life hard. And, brother, I recognize your voice, and I know that you're a conservative, brother, and God bless you that your conservatism works for you. But it does not work for everybody. I have been
well,
hired.
Those people that get
oh, hold
hired.
On, hold on, hold on, hold on. Let me finish
yeah.
my point.
Well, let
my
me be
point
a,
is,
I can counter what
me,
you just
let
said.
Me just, let me finish my point before
okay.
before you counter it. My
right.
point is just because these companies hire black folks does not mean they hire them so that they will thrive. They so that they will meet their quotas and keep the government off their back. They
we need to be the ones owning the airplane company. That's the problem.
Well, I will let me counter this, please, if you don't mind. Yes, these kids are getting hired. They're not being hired at minimum wage. My grandson interned with ExxonMobil
out of
several that was trying to get him. And the thing is that they have to be prepared. If they're not prepared, then they don't even get in the door.
Well,
once they get in the door,
well,
ma'am, can I finish, please? I mean,
well,
I'll tell
ahead.
You what, I just continue to listen. You go ahead. You had your last word was that they ain't receiving a fair justice. We'll end at that. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. So, Maria, your point about them owning businesses, starting businesses, this brother wants to say, you know, okay, so these folks weren't hired at minimum wage. It does not matter. I'd like to find out, track these people, these black folks that are being hired as engineers, and see where they are in 5 years and 10 years.
The one thing he was right about is we got a lot of black folks that can aspire and are of excellence and know engineering, science, and all of that. I mean, these are things that was
That's
ingrained
what
in us.
School's
so,
about.
You know.
Yes.
But my thing is, you know, we still want to even take the crumbs there. Like, you know, we built America. Why we don't own airlines? You know, why would.
Exactly.
You know, so we okay with them giving us 400 jobs, but we're not okay with them not putting in what we need to do to own airlines.
Right.
Well,
if
we need
all
to
those
do to own oil and land and, you know, so.
And starting their own firm.
We've been robbed and raped in America, okay? They owe us everything.
That's why we need the reparation. If you have 400 black engineers and they all have the adequate education and training, they should be starting their own engineering firms. You know, and
yeah,
I understand
that
you need to get it on the
still, even
yeah.
when we think we're thinking big, we're still thinking small. You
right.
know, we're still saying,
we've been
oh,
trained
wait, look
to.
What they look what they letting us have. What?
You know,
what do you mean letting us
the
have?
Biggest,
they owe this to us.
The biggest thing I think that is a roadblock for black people is thinking that, oh, if I get the education, everything is going to be rosy. That is not true. I went to one of the most conservative law schools in the country, one of the top 10 law schools in the country. And believe me, they let me know every single day that I was there just because of affirmative action. I was this, I was that, I wasn't good enough. So they made my life a living hell during the time that I was there. PTSD, yeah, I had all of that. So this brother, like I say, God bless him with his conservative views, you know, but all of us ain't going to be Clarence Thomas. All of us are not going to use affirmative action to get in the door and then close the door behind us. That's why Clarence Thomas was able to survive and make it to the Supreme Court, because he changed his tune. He used to be progressive and a black person. Now he's an honorary white man. And that's just the way it is.
Well,
so,
you know, I believe in uplifting and empowering. So, you know, it don't do no good for me to put people down or make them feel like they're not prepared or they don't care or kids' education. Come on now. You got to have some essentials. You got to have housing. You got to have clothing.
Yes.
And you have to
have
food.
You have to have all those things before you can even think about
it's
education.
It's
going
to be hard for you to function. You know.
That's right.
So
that's right.
Come on now, let's start
that's
taking care of our people.
Such
like
a hard
let's start
time.
And let's start lifting them up. Let's start empowering them. Like we're
that's
not looking
right.
for handouts. We're really looking for hand up. You know.
Exactly.
And we look for a hand up and our hand gets slapped. And I love
exactly.
the people that can make it through. So you know when you make it through, guess what? Like for real, you have a responsibility to pave the way for the next person.
Mm-hmm. Reach
you know,
back and help somebody else.
I got an education,
else.
Not so I can run around and brag about my education. And I know that the profession I went into probably won't ever make me a wealthy person. I'd have to do
See?
Some other venture to become wealthy.
But how many
but what
lives
it did
are,
is
have
gave
you
me
touched?
A responsibility. It gave me a responsibility to go back to my community and educate in my community. You know, anytime we talk about this one got this and this one got that, we getting selfish. And we're not really thinking for the empowerment of our people as a whole.
What
you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know what the problem that I have, sister, and I say this to all the listeners, and for those of you who want to get in on this conversation, I have a problem with people who say that black people's problems are black people. Yeah, we're the problem. We're our own self's problem. And that might be true to some degree, but when you got a whole government and a whole system that is built
set
to keep you down.
Set up to rob you. They robbed us. They still robbing us. They robbed the poor. How the rich get rich?
Yeah.
Didn't they say the rich get rich off the poor?
Yeah. Absolutely. You can, that's capitalism. That's capitalism. You can't have rich without poor. That's the way the capitalist system works. And so our kids need to understand that this is where critical thinking comes in, Maria. This comes from having a well-rounded education, which some of us were lucky enough to get. You know, and
people get
and
blocked by
get,
comfort. They get blocked, blocked by comfort and privilege. And
yes,
the one thing
do.
I like that I read about in history about the churches and so forth, those churches weren't put together so much to sit and push Christianity. Those churches were places of planning. Those churches were places of being strategic. Those churches were places where they informed their people and sent their people out informed and empowered.
Mm-hmm.
They wasn't bought off.
Right. You know, it's really interesting that in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, when we were fighting so hard, black people were fighting so hard for civil rights, you know, you didn't have, because of segregation, legal segregation, you didn't have people thinking they were so much better because one person is a shop owner and the other person is a street sweeper. You have people living, you know, shoulder to shoulder with each other next door, going to the same churches many times and having the same fight. And I don't know where we lost
that. The same fight, it was the same fight, whether they had or had not.
That's right. That's right. And this is what I try to say now. And the brother who was on before will probably disagree. Nobody is free until all of us are free. If your lifestyle
I could have respected the statement and the stance more if it would have been like, hey, every year at such and such date, look up this link, look up this this place. They bring kids from all over the United States and they have on the spot job. Now share that information, okay? Don't share your haughtiness. You know,
exactly. Oh, that's a good way to put it.
Share that information. You know, put that out there.
That's a good way to put it.
Hey, look on this link. These are the people that do it. Okay, we know it's in Detroit.
Right.
Okay, well, where's the link? How can we link up there? Because we got kids that are bright and excellent and would excel in a job setting like that or would take advantage of those type of opportunities.
Reverend Harris just took his son to Southern University. He just took him to a HBCU. He's a freshman at Southern
University. He brought back information to us.
Yes, he did.
He said, these are the things that we have to do, and these are the ways we have to get our kids prepared to get in here so we don't have to go through some of the things that we had to learn and go through.
That's right.
So
that's right.
And that's how you empower. You're empowered by, you know, saying, oh, yeah, y'all don't know how to read, you know. 75%. Okay, well, we got a lot of people that do know how to read.
Right.
You know, and we got things but like empowering and sharing that information, brother. Share that information.
Absolutely.
All these places
share
that information. Maybe we don't have that information. You know,
maybe we don't.
Of several people's lives, you know. They're going to have to hire more than 600 to make a real impact, but, you know. Hey, that's a start.
You're absolutely right, Maria, and this is one of the reasons why, you know, I spent so many years in Southwest Fresno tutoring. My degree is in English, so I tutored reading. You know, I tutored everything, comprehension, reading speed, all of that, and I did it for free for years. For years I did it for free. So
and the reason I can talk mess is because I've been in this line since I was 17. It's been over 25 years. And I've seen both sides, all sides, poor sides, wealthy sides. And what it came down to was we don't get the same type of education that the more affluent children get. And it really is all one fight, no matter if you have or have not.
It's
if
true.
Black.
If you black. And that's why I keep saying it, none of us are free until all of us are free. And in Fresno, unify, we see and hear about the microaggressions that go on all the time. This is just a concentrated version of what's happening in classrooms throughout this city. And Fresno has got 500,000 people in it, over 500,000 people in it, with all these schools, primary schools, middle schools, high schools, that black children are dealing with this. And I can't believe we're still having to go through this in 2019. So I've been out of high school over 40 years, and I'm telling you, if somebody had told me that this would still be going on, I'd be ready to fight them and say, you a lie. But here we are in 2019, and our children are still catching hell just because they're going to school to get an education. So parents can only do so much, but Maria, you are right. We need to hold the school district that we're paying their salary, hold them accountable, the teachers in the classroom, hold them accountable. But you make a very good point. If the parents are holding down 2 and 3 jobs apiece, when are they going to have time to do all the things that most parents want to do but are not able to do?
Yes.
It's difficult. So, callers, if any of you have things that you want to share about your experience with Fresno Unified, please call in at 563-999-3490 and share your experience with us, because we want to hear from you. Now, we understand that Bullard is in an affluent area. We understand that, you know, you have all these magnet schools, you know, around the city of Fresno. But what we're saying is that if our children at Bullard are catching hell for whatever reason, then the black folks in the city of Fresno need to stand with these children and their parents. And there are some of us that are not going anywhere. We are going to stand with them until this issue is resolved to the parents and the children's satisfaction. So if you all have something that you want to share about this, not as a generalization, but if you have children going to Fresno Unified Schools and you have something you want to share, or you have a way to make it better for those of us living in the Central Valley, please call in at 563-999-3490. So, Reverend Harris, let me ask you, if it turns out, maybe not this Friday, but in the future, if it turns out that this little girl is still on this cheer squad, and if it turns out that the parents want to continue to protest, what kind of things will be planned in the future?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. Guys are having a good discussion, a lot of positive energy, a lot of good debate, a lot of education. I think that Fresno right now, as we know, is second in the nation with the highest concentration of poverty. We do know that anything bad, just look at Fresno. Our brother earlier, I was listening to him. He made some pretty good points. But one of the things that, I'm going to get to your question. One of the things that's interesting about Fresno is that Fresno, I believe, is the third or fourth largest school district in California. And I believe that Fresno, you all can help me out. I believe we're only 4% of the population here.
That's true.
But at one point in time in Fresno, coming out of the 70s, 60s, and 70s, we had a lot of black principals in our school district here. And it's very important to have different ethnic and leadership so that those black children, brown children, or white children can look up to them and say, hey,
right,
I want to be like, who was one of our principals? I want to be like Burnell Newsom. I want to be like Dolphus Trotter.
John Sharpshire.
We had over 20-something principals at one time in Fresno in the early 80s. And right now, in 2019, we do not have one male principal. Nowhere.
That's true.
So then we ask the question, well, is the parents' fault that the kid's not learning? Well, not. You can always share the blame. But the reality is that we do not have black male representation in the school district that understands our children. Every other ethnic in our school district here in Fresno has their ethnic and leadership capacity for black people. So then you say, well, is that the parents' fault that you don't have no black principal? No, it's not the parents' fault. It's the administration's fault. Okay?
That's
because
right.
If you look at the arrest record here in Fresno, you will see that the police department, black people are more profile, and we're only 5% of the community. And these are statistics, my brother, that
right.
You can look on the internet and that you can research Fresno and
right.
See how this system here in Fresno is like Miss Pac-Man or Mr. Pac-Man. It's just gobbling black people up here in Fresno. And so the problem is that I see is that we need our own independent school system. We cannot survive in this school system here. Why? Because we don't even have people in leadership that look like us in the school district that can understand our children. Every ethnic, I said again, every ethnic from Hmong to white to whatever, but black, we do not have anything that leadership from a principal standpoint. So we understand that it's important that male, important to have that male in leadership capacity. And you say, well, how come the school board don't put no male, black males principals? That's a good question because we've been asking,
that's
we've been begging. So how do you do that when you're only 5% of a population?
Right.
We have no power here in Fresno to vote anybody in office on any level,
nope.
From city council to board of supervisors to a school board,
nope.
To anything else. So we're always at the mercy of other ethnics here in this community.
Right.
So when we ask the question, why the kids don't know how to read, my friend did because of poverty. It's just straight up.
Mm-hmm. Come on,
you know?
Tell it.
And who created poverty? It's a good question
right.
We need to have a show on. Who created poverty in this country?
Right.
Was it
exactly.
Black people? Was the black people who made poverty in this country? Oh, well, hell, we were already poor
right.
From the get-go. So how in the world?
So we're trying to move
poverty?
Up. That's right. So we're trying to move up, and we're trying to buy property. We get redlined into an area that they don't want. We're sharing residential areas with industrial. And so then you got the environmental racism that you talk about, Rev, with the rendering plants. You know, it's a slippery slope when you start trying to say it's black people's fault that, you know, that they're poor, or it's black people's fault that their schools are poor.
Yeah. Well, I guess it was black people's fault that Black Wall Street got burnt down. I guess it was black, you know.
Mm.
Always blame the the people who get beat up all the time. They're always blaming the victims. I mean, Black Wall Street, 1921, was supposed to have been passed down to us today. You know, there was over 30-something towns that were built after slavery. All of them was burnt down by a racist white Ku Klux Klan in the U.S. Okay? But
that's
if you look
true.
At the farmland across America, I don't see white farms that their land was taken away from them. So white folks have always had a hand up all the time after they done destroyed everything that our ancestors built. Our ancestors didn't get a loan in 1921 in Tulsa, Oklahoma. They built it by their hands. And so, you know,
we've
always been behind the eight ball here in this country. And so those who are conservative or whatever you want to call them, you know, best luck to you. But all I can say is this. We need an independent institution away from the public education system. And we need to do just what the Black Panthers did. Teach our own children, police our own community, and go from there. But getting back to your question earlier about the Bullard stuff here, again, there's zero respect for black people in this city. Zero. I'm talking about from clergy all the way down to black organizations. And it's just sad that we sit here and that there's no outcry, no accountability
right.
of around this issue of this little white sister painting her face black, using the N-word so freely, like it's like you drink Kool-Aid. And so, you know, and not to talk about the threats that the mothers have received, not to talk about the black people's houses got broken into, not to talk about all that stuff that's on top of all of the tension that's going on. And then white people just says, get over it. Don't worry about it. Well, who are you, first of all, talk from a privileged position to tell us what we should get over, what we shouldn't get over?
Exactly.
You know, that was who created the name nigga in the first place? Do anybody know?
I believe it was the white power structure, the slave owners. I believe it was them.
The white man created the word nigga here in this country, and he created it just for black people to demonize us and to make us feel less than of a people. And now their great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren now is using the same word and the same process to belittle us here in our community. So, like I said, all I can tell people is when it's time to stand, stand. It doesn't matter. No, just stand. All you got to do is stand.
Yeah.
Stand for what's right. You know, if your heart feels right, stand. That's all you got to do. So that's what we're doing.
That's all you
got to
do.
And, you know, I'm waiting to hear back from the mothers when we're going to do our next direct action. Because who said that if you lay down for anything?
If you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything.
Exactly.
I'm not sure who said it, but it's famous now. It's famous now. And, you know, Reverend, I have to say I'm so, so blessed that I know both you and Sister Maria Ells. I've been so blessed in my old age because some of us been around Fresno a long time, and we've been swinging for a long time against this power structure. And as long as I can draw breath and I'm living in this city, I'm going to continue to do that. But I'm also blessed that I can see that there are some black people who are going to stand up and fight for what's right and not just roll over and say, okay, well, whatever you say, Massa. You know, whatever I need to tell me what I need to say so I can keep my job. Tell me what I need to say so I can get this loan. Tell me what I need to do for you to keep me on this job and promote me. You know, some of us have done without a lot because we were not willing to cave in to the racism. And so that being said, you know, we're not going anywhere. So the people at Fresno Unify, the administration at Bullard have to understand that we're going to be right here. We're going to be right here fighting this fight about this injustice that's happened on campus at Bullard. We're not going anywhere. So I hope that they're in it for the long haul because I know we are. I know we are. So we are getting close, very, very close to the end of our hour. And I want to thank Sister Maria Ells, who is one of the premier educators in Southwest Fresno. She's been doing what she's been doing for many, many years. I want to thank Reverend Dr. Floyd Harris Jr. for running the board. And I want to thank him for doing what he's been doing for the last 30-plus years. It is not easy being a revolutionary, progressive black person in Fresno, California, let me tell you. I got the singed feet and the singed behind to prove that. So for all of you in the listening audience, I want to thank you. I want to thank the brother from Missouri who called in. You know, I don't mean to disrespect him, but he has to understand that unless he's walking in the shoes of a black person in Fresno, California, GOP, red area of California, he really does not understand where we're coming from. And I would urge him to read up on Fresno, California, the stats that you talked about, Rev, and then he get a better understanding of where we're coming from. So I want to thank everybody who listened tonight. I want to thank Sister Maria. I want to thank Reverend Harris. I want to thank all of you in the listening audience. You know, I like to say that everything is political, and I want to invite everybody to the general meeting of the West Fresno Democratic Club. It'll be happening on Saturday, September 21st at 1033 U Street at the Democratic headquarters here in Fresno. It's across from Office Depot and Starbucks on U Street. So come join us. The meeting runs from 9 until 11. And we have some pretty big things planned for 2020. We have a big get out the vote push. And so those of you who are listening and you think you want to join the West Fresno Democratic Club, come on, it's only $15 a year. So I want to thank all of our listeners tonight. I want to thank the black cheerleaders and the black moms. I want to thank all the black football players at Bullard. I want you to stay up and know that you all are not by yourselves. And what I like to say at the end of every show, I want y'all to stay black till we get back. And we're going to sign off for tonight. Good night, y'all.